We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
At the time, and maybe just a little bit, even looking back now, it was like, why the hell is Joey Porter on the field right now?
It's January 2016, Steelers at Bengals. This is Remember That Game, the podcast about sporting events that take you on a journey and maybe chart the path of the zeitgeist. I'm your host, Thomas Emmerich, and my guest is Justin Edwards, senior analyst at 4for4 Fantasy Football and data for Pro Football Focus, and a Cincinnatian. For anyone who says this show is just some sick game, well, here's another data point. So, Carson Palmer's knee, Andy Dalton's thumb, and now Joe Burrow's wrist. Which one felt like the biggest gut punch?
It hasn't been too long with the most recent one, but the Andy Dalton thumb was really, really something brutal. That team did feel like it was Super Bowl bound, or at least deep playoff bound. So having him break his thumb, pretty miserable.
In each case, right before the young quarterback's salary cap allocation makes the jump for future seasons, different contract structures, but in each instance, you lose that team building edge as the quarterback gets injured. So by this 2015 wild card here between the Steelers and Bengals, Bengals are 3-point home dogs with AJ McCarron starting over the injured Andy Dalton. Were you resigned going into this about the Bengals and that championship window, or were you more just, I don't care about the big picture right now, please just take out the Steelers?
I think at this point in my fandom, this rivalry was so heated at this point, I think I was more concerned with just ruining the Steelers' day. Dalton was maybe able to come back at some point in the postseason, but that was still up in the air too. They had been talking about that since it happened in the regular season matchup. So kind of resigned to a mostly lost season, and it would have felt really good to just ruin Pittsburgh's hopes of continuing in this playoff run, I think.
Yeah, what was it like on the ground in Cincinnati with the ripples from this heated rivalry flowing down the Ohio River for the 10-year anniversary of the Kimo von Ohlhofen hit on Carson Palmer in the wild card?
Oh, yeah, the animosity was real. Especially at that point, even in my adulthood, I was probably a little more of a fan of the laundry than I am now, but it was definitely after the Kimo Palmer tackle, you know, the perfect passer rating Carson Palmer playoff game when he went 1-for-1 before getting sacked. Yeah, it was pretty hyphy going into this game. We were looking forward to trying to take the big brother out with a backup quarterback, and it didn't look good for almost this entire game.
In 2015, the Bengals started 8-0. Andy Dalton injures his thumb, interception return tackle against the Steelers. At that point, he was fourth in PFF quarterback grades. And to front porch this further, in the regular season, virtually every pregame warmup, every tackle, every shove could turn into an extracurricular tussle between these teams. Each hit scrutinized by both squads, whether it push the envelope into dirty. These teams had their gripes. As a Bengals fan, would you assert this was actually the most tense rivalry, if not the most mutually destructive, of the 2010s?
You'd have to say, I mean, you'd have to think so. I don't know who could even come close to this. There were a number of just unhinged personalities on both sides of the ball. That was difficult, I'm sure, for even the Steelers fan base, where you're like, I can only get so mad about what the opposition's doing because we have so many players that are just not playing the most positive brand of football, maybe is the best way to put it. I mean, it was wild. And we have infractions that are on 3rd and 18, starting whole new drives. We've got infractions that keep the game longer than it needs to be on both sides of the ball. Both teams are losing entire drives, giving up points because they just can't reel it in.
Yeah, they'd be chirping at each other in the media. They didn't take kindly to Steelers didn't to Le'Veon Bell's injury. I think the year prior, Reggie Nelson, he was injured on a Reggie Nelson tackle, and Bell missed their playoff game. This year, Bell missed the remainder of the season as he was tackled as Vontaze Burfict came in from behind. Sort of, I guess, what they're calling a hip drop after the Mark Andrews play the other night, but right. No Le'Veon Bell in this game. Obviously, you have Carson Palmer getting hit low by Kimo von Olhoffen. As I recall, that was not a penalty then, but you can't do that now.
I don't think it was.
So a lot of things, yeah, that were legal at the time. You'll see in this rivalry over that like 10-year span or so, that is not legal anymore. It was also, for some reason, the Steelers thought it was just like open season on the Bengals punter. Like they broke his jaw, I think, when the season prior.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, you have Antonio Brown just like jumped, like karate kicked him in the face. all sorts of wild stuff. But for Bengals, the most brutal one this season here, Andy Dalton breaking that thumb December 15th. How annoying was it that this just happened? These injuries just happened to come against the Steelers, and a feeling of something has been kind of taken away from you as far as what 2015 could have been.
Being the little brother team of the AFC, the entire AFC, honestly, for decades, truly decades. And then having our one shot get dismantled with Palmer getting rolled over on, as you said, it was not flagged. It wasn't necessarily a dirty play. But that was our time to shine, and then to have it taken away one play into the game. And then for so long, we were waiting for that other chance. And then 2015 rolls along, and it's we feel like the cream of the crop of the league. We feel like at least the top three team, if not the best team in the league. And maybe putting that all on Andy Dalton, who is thought of now as a kind of a mediocre quarterback, seems silly in hindsight, but he was performing at peak Dalton back then. And he was, you know, as you said, he was in the argument for MVP votes, which seems insane looking back now. But yeah, having it kind of stolen away felt bad. But the fact that it was stolen away, not stolen away, it was kind of a freak. It was a freak injury. But back then it felt like the Steelers had stolen away our season once again. It was a little hard to swallow.
Championship window cruelly shut, or 2005, 2015, hopefully not 2023, even though Burrow's out the rest of the season now. Contract goes back up to $29 million next year, and then the following year is what, it's up around $50 million. Like, they could still make it work from a team, but you're losing a big team building edge here. Hopefully this is another case where, you know, Andy Dalton's didn't go, it was never going to be as big of a share of the cap as Joe Burrow, but it was, he did on a second deal get like what was the new QB middle class contract, and was going to see around 10% of the cap, as opposed to the first year, few years on a second round rookie deal, which was like a 1% of the cap. But and this team was, it seemed like they had no real major weaknesses. This landscape in 2015, that Broncos team, you know, all-time great defense, but many feel one of the weaker. Maybe this was a more open field. Did that sting as that progressed and seeing the rest of the AFC that season?
Yeah, I mean, it was just one more thing added to the unlikely road of the Bengals team, who had lost at this point. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 straight wild card games. And like, now we actually have a chance to kind of sneak on through here. That was the Panthers' year, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not the biggest powerhouse of Super Bowls going on that year. It kind of just adds more salt to the wound of what could have been. Was this Bengals team better than, you know, bigger powerhouses, the Patriots at their prime? There were probably even better versions of this Steelers team that were probably leaps and bounds better than this 2015 Bengals team. But yeah, could have been a nice little road here, get to the Super Bowl, if we had a quarterback. Or, I mean, McCarron wasn't that bad either. I think in his final three games, he threw a couple interceptions in his spot, his little relief duty. I don't know if he threw another interception the rest of the regular season, unless I'm misremembering. But it still could have happened, if not for a bit of a fluky ending to the last game of the season.
In 2015, you have Peyton Manning really falling off the cliff physically at that point in his career. They're able to get across the finish line. Also in the AFC, you have the Patriots, who I think lost like four of their final six. That was the year they were without Scarnecchia, and then as soon as it ended, Bill Parcells called Scarnecchia up, and his hair offensive line's a mess.
Right, you need to come back.
And so that was a weak Patriots team. They usually have a lot more offensive line continuity than that. The years Brady hasn't had it, the big ones are 2015, 2019, and 2022. Great quarterbacks, even better with a quality, high continuity offensive line, as we like to point out. But in this game, you have two offensive lines, Bengals and Steelers, that kind of the paragons of continuity on that part of the decade of the 2010s. Steelers would continue that with Villanueva, Foster, Pouncey, DeCastro, Gilbert. Whereas Cincy, up until this year, and then it kind of fell apart after, was a good unit there as well. You do your O-line rankings and matchups to exploit each week for 4-for-4 fantasy football. How would you evaluate the matchup from a fantasy perspective for this one here in the 2015 wild card between the Steelers and Bengals?
I mean, these are two very impressive offensive lines. Definitely would be, if this was the year 2023, sticking these offensive lines in would be a couple of offenses that would be well within the rotation of the weekly teams I talk about. There's only so many good offensive lines, so you know, I tend to touch on some offensive lines over and over again because there are some bad offensive lines as well. But these would be two teams I would be constantly talking about, if not every week, just depending on their matchups. Which is kind of surprising because we don't get a lot of points in this wild card matchup. The defenses are both playing pretty incredibly, honestly. I think on a week to week basis, the Steelers probably had the little bit of the edge along the line, but we've got Andrew Whitworth and Kevin Zeitler on the Bengals side of the line. Not for too much longer. Sadly, they would both walk in free agency. If not after this season, then very soon after for Zeitler.
Yeah, 17 for both.
Okay, yeah. So one more year of these guys. And then we kind of just had some plug-and-play people. You know, you run through all these names every week and you kind of forget some people. I had completely forgotten that Jake Fisher was a player in the NFL until rewatching these games recently. Like, oh yeah, there's a name. Second-round pick of this 2015 season, I think. And Clint Bowling still doing well for the Bengals. And then I think he was probably the last piece that was still here a few seasons after that, after the Whitworth and Zeitler leaving. Yeah, I mean, Villanueva was a giant among men. He's always a fun guy to watch. Until recently, his last season was 2021 with the Ravens. But yeah, you just gotta love someone with that kind of reach on your blind side. And yeah, and even the plays they do get beat, Roethlisberger is a tank. So that kind of helps. It helps their sack rate when it's impossible to take the guy down.
2011 through 2015, Dalton's first 5 years, top 10 pass block grade for the Cincinnati Bengals. Haven't sniffed top 10 since. Both quarterbacks still struggled quite a bit in this game. We had cold, wet conditions. You had two defenses with a lot of good players. Third matchup of a heated rivalry game. You expect it to be sloppy to some degree. It being a cold driving rain doesn't help. First drive, Roethlisberger finds Darius Heyward-Bey open at the sticks, drop. This is a interesting Steelers offense here. D'Angelo Williams also out. D'Angelo, the People's League winner, Williams.
Right.
So down to Fitzgerald Toussaint, who was fine, but like you got him and then and Antonio Brown. You have a situation where even with AJ McCarron and Andy Dalton talking in his ear all half, you got the Steelers only up 6-0. Now, as you're rewatching the broadcast and seeing them hang around and seeing Phil Simms and Jim Nance constantly reference that the Steelers are 6 seed, and they were also 6 seed when they beat the Bengals in 05 and went and won a Super Bowl, you know.
I think they brought it up after every commercial break, actually. You know, they are the 6 seed again. I know, yeah. That's what's so killer about rewatching these games from a point of fandom, and you're like, maybe they didn't lose. Maybe I'm not remembering this game that well after all. And just the constant, well, you know, when they just like this, when Martavis Bryant catches that ball and they're like, well, when they were the 6th seed in the Super Bowl, Santonio Holmes had a remarkable catch a lot like that. Like,
it did remind me of that, though.
It did.
It was painful.
It's no less torturous, though.
The Nazi crew actually got really brutal with it at some points in a way that did a great representation of the game. They talk about how Dalton had his cast off. Maybe he could be back next week. A little hopium there for you.
Yeah, a little bit at least. They did. They kept showing him too. Like, wow, he looks pretty good over there. Like he's supposed to be sickly or something from his from his injured thumb.
You rewatch these games. Got to have sound on, everyone. Got to have sound on.
Oh yeah, you have to. You got to. No matter how set, if you're on the wrong end or the right end, it's a nice reminder of, it's also like a point in time reference, you know? It's like 2015 doesn't really seem that far away, but the broadcast was a little different. And I mean, some of the play calls were a little different too. Doesn't really have anything to do with Andy Dalton or the broadcast, but
yeah,
Marvin Lewis was always kind of, and Hugh Jackson, both of them were both kind of conservative in their times to a fault. And then you see some of these punts where they're like, they're already playing from behind. They have a backup quarterback against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And they're like punting from the 50 on like 4th and 1. And yeah. You're like, oh man, they would be reamed. I don't remember if they were reamed or not. Then Twitter in 2015 seems like a lifetime ago, but at least in the living room, I was watching it, and we weren't too stoked about it.
I enjoy these broadcasts so much more on reappraisal. Dalton not in a cast, where he was coaching up AJ McCarron between drives in the sideline here. Again, yeah, they get the Martavis catch to go up 15-0 in the third. Ryan Shazier in a hit, I think now will be flagged. It was a legal hit at the time. Knocks out Gio Bernard helmet to helmet. On top of that challenge, you find out it's also a fumble. Steelers get the ball back, 15-0.
Oh, it was bedlam. That was that was easily the end of the game. There was no more hope left in the household. We were certain it was over. And oddly enough, as the Bengals are already down 15-0 here, got pretty lucky on the fumble that very clearly had a concussion. I mean, he looks completely unconscious, but his legs get tangled in Ryan Shazier's, which would have been a fumble six, which would have been 22-0, and then absolutely over. But yeah, we were all pretty certain at that time that the game was far, far over. There was no coming back from this 15-0 deficit.
And then the Bengals at the end of the third quarter with a brutal hit of their own via, of course, Bavontaze Burfict landing on Ben Roethlisberger, really getting as much of that Vontaze Burfict weight as he could on Roethlisberger's throwing shoulder. Nowadays, that's 15 yards easy. Right. Back then, that was a legal hit. And just in 2015, the Steelers and Bengals really do a good job of illustrating what future penalties will look like.
Right.
But Landry Jones is in, and there's the Bengals window back. AJ McCarron he's been on some big stages. Yeah, his teammates are saying it to the camera for the NFL Films crew. YOLOs it to AJ Green, picks up a big 40-yard pass interference penalty. The defense is shutting down Landry Jones. And then 2 minutes left, A.J. McCarron moves the ball across midfield on a nice throw to Marvin Jones. And then on 4th-and-1, the blitz and the open space and the slant hits Marvin Jones again to keep the drive rolling. You're basically – and then once in 2 minute territory, you have McCarron saying A.J.'s back there somewhere again. Touchdown. Bengals up 16-15. But you have the 2-point conversion. Maybe you can be up by 3. What's your roller coaster of emotions here as AJ McCarron throws a backwards pass to behind Jeremy Hill in the backfield?
Yeah, like is this what we came up with? We haven't been thinking about what what we'll need to do if we score a touchdown this whole time. You're outlining these last couple of drives like, all right, just throw it. Marvin Jones and AJ Green, something good might happen, or we'll just lose by 15 points. Like just get it to our guys here at some point. Yeah, backwards pass to Jeremy Hill, probably the slowest skill position player on the team at this point, besides maybe Tyler Eifert. Let's get him in space, I guess, from the 3 yard line. Yeah, not the greatest.
Yeah, and Eifert, I think, had 13 touchdowns that year. Like, give Eifert a chance, give AJ Green a chance, or give Marvin Jones.
Eifert led the league at one point. I don't know if he finished the season on top, but I think back in the Week 14 game, he already had 11 touchdowns, I think. So he was leading the league at that point.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I think he was a PFF honorable mention All Pro that season too. So okay. Big year for the Bengals skill position players. In a wide open AFC, what could have been? I guess it could have been even worse because I don't think that throw was supposed to be backwards. I think in the event that Jeremy Hill didn't reach behind him in the driving rain and secure that pass, that hits the ground and goes the other way. Next thing you know, Steelers are up 17-16 on the 2-point conversion.
Right. Oh, man. Literally a roller coaster.
Yeah.
It never stopped.
Nope, never stops. Bengals get, I wouldn't call it another break. it was more perfect making a break on the ball. I guess it is kind of a break that's Landry Jones throwing it, but interception in Pittsburgh territory, up one, under 2 minutes left, runs into the wrong tunnel with his fellow Bengals as if, you know, as if that's all folks.
I think that also would have been a penalty, come to think of it. I don't know if you're allowed to leave the field. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. And he came back without his helmet on, which...
that's right.
But maybe he went. Maybe he was in the locker room by the time he took the helmet off, and so then you can come back out without your helmet on. it was different. Yeah, I don't know if it's a penalty now, but it was a different time back then. And I'm going to guess you had a hunch that that was a bad thing to do. just right. Just for the vibes, just for the jinx. I don't know. Or maybe you were like, yeah, it's over. Where were you at?
No, I mean, I don't know if I was blaming my trepidation necessarily on the fact that Perfect ran into the tunnel, but I feel like I would have felt a lot better if in some bizarro world he just put the ball down and went and sat on the bench. I feel like I would have been like, oh, we do have this wrapped up. Look, even Perfect knows that this game's over. And I don't know. Yeah, I think saying that it was a sign of things to come is probably the best way to put it. And you're like, please stop.
It feels like something.
Something's in the air. It's not confetti.
You do before everything goes horribly wrong, right?
Right. Yeah, that's like if famous last words were an action, that would be in the dictionary, I think.
Yeah. And it'd be one thing maybe if you're the Steelers, but you're the Bengals. So something is begging to go wrong against the Steelers.
Act like you've been here before, even though you've never been here before.
Yeah.
Or you haven't been here in the last 35 years, maybe.
Yeah, Perfect and, Pac-Man Jones, they made a lot of plays this day. But the ones that will haunt them come in a couple of drives here after Bengals get the ball back. Jeremy Hill fumbles. Had two hands on the ball. Maybe not high and tight enough, but it's a wet day. Ball gets ripped out. And yeah, he was steaming on the sideline, had a feel for the guy.
No one next to him either. They just kind of let him, you know. I think different teams handle it different ways, but it was kind of just like gutturally sad to see him stand there all on his own, just processing that he may have lost the game. But I mean, there's only 40 seconds left on the clock. So what could possibly happen?
Yeah, they actually get into a fourth down there. You know, they've been playing good defense all game, but Steelers able to get Antonio Brown out of the slot, just does Antonio Brown things, gets open on Leon Hall, who, along with I feel like Geno Atkins, is like two keys to the Bengals being this good team on the budget they have in that part of the 2010s. Leon Hall and Geno Atkins at these positions where there's like a market inefficiency, interior disruptor, both pass and run with Atkins, and slot corner with Leon Hall. And Leon Hall, I think that season was graded amongst slot corners just behind Chris Harris and Tyrann Mathieu. And Atkins was just behind the guys that got all the love, J.J. Watt and Aaron Donald. But those two, Atkins and Hall, were like, didn't get as much love, didn't get as much pay, but were really good at a position that started to become valued more. And the Bengals were able to get him under Mike Brown's budget as a result, I suppose.
Oh, this was really Geno at the height of his powers too. As a Bengals fan, like, we had decent defensive linemen throughout the years, but they played for such horrible teams, it really didn't matter. It's like Big Daddy Wilkerson, like, how throughout the 90s, like, that's great. He was great, great defensive lineman, but that means nothing. We're still winning three games a season. But yeah, this is a year for Geno, like, just what you're talking about. He had 85 pressures as an interior defensive lineman. Those are Aaron Donald type numbers. J.J. Watt had 94, so did you say that this is his, or one of his many defensive player of the years for Watt, isn't it?
Yeah, 2015. Yeah, that would have to be in the Watt reign.
You know, when J.J. Watt's out there, I don't think anyone else is going to win the award. But I mean, yeah, having an interior lineman that could possibly win defensive player of the year, that's unheard of in Cincinnati. I mean, it's unheard of in almost any city, but I had never experienced such a tear up the middle like that in my fandom. It was very fun to watch. And then, yeah, Leon Hall, one of these seasons, I don't think it wouldn't have been 2015, but the secondary led the league in interceptions. One of these aughts, somewhere in between the 2005 and 2015 year. So that was obviously fun to watch. And having that kind of game-breaking defender on your team kind of gives you a little backdrop when you're leaning on your offense so often and don't have someone that can get in there like Atkins or Hall and destroy the game is fun. It's like a little cherry on top.
I mean, low-key, loaded unit. Atkins, before J.J. Watt came in 2012 and then Aaron Donald shortly thereafter, Atkins was that dude. In 2012, actually, when Watt was, I think Atkins ranked just ahead of Watt, PFF's top interior defender. In 2011, Geno Atkins, top pass rush grade among interior defenders, two spots ahead of Justin Smith.
Oh, yeah.
That was
terrible. Man.
Imagine if they kept him around.
Oh, can you imagine? Instead, the 49ers, who feel like they've had this defensive line for the last 25 years. Yep. Just let them walk. The Bengals were known to do that in this century. in this forever.
What hurt worse, a Smith walking in the late aughts or Andrew Whitworth walking in the late 2010s?
Oh, that's a tough one, honestly. I was going to just jump and say Whitworth because I just appreciate offensive line play so much. But he was, I mean, to give him a little bit of props, he was kind of getting up there in age. I don't think he was that. Who knew that he was going to play at his level until 42? So he would have been. Oh, yeah. I mean, he's 35 years old. He's 36, I think. I'm trying to math. So he's like 36 years old when he leaves. So it hurt, but I guess that makes more sense. Justin Smith was like 26 or something, if I remember right.
That was
probably the less sensible one. Maybe Whitworth hurt more, and maybe I was starting to understand football better at that time than when Justin Smith left, but they both suck.
Tough to predict someone playing at elite level into their right up to like 40 is
right. That's, yeah.
Yeah. Tough to expect.
I think if you're going to lose that bet, then that's one you can kind of shrug your shoulders. Like, those are pretty long odds that he's going to be 41 and still awesome, or 40 years old and still awesome. So that one's okay. The Bengals have let a lot of talent walk over the years. I think they've been better about it recently, as in 2023. I don't remember 2015 too well. I guess they were locking some people up. But yeah, earlier in the, especially through the terrible 90s and very early 2000s, they were re-signing a lot of people. They were kind of notorious for it. But with Whitworth, at least I understand. I still don't like it, but I get it.
Fourth quarter here. You go from good times to bad times real quick. Win probability following the A.J. Green touchdown for the Steelers was 28%. Following the perfect interception, 4%. Even after Hill fumbles, Steelers only at 20% win probability. Then Ben Roethlisberger comes from the locker room back into the game. They get the fourth down with Antonio Brown beating Leon Hall they were in like a rub with Heath Miller and Antonio Brown, and that's just a tough position to be in. Got about 20 seconds left. Antonio Brown has a pass come toward him that he has no chance of catching. And regardless of whether he had a chance of catching, what happens next is not great. Perfect puts the shoulder down on the helmet, and Joey Porter comes out, kind of gets into it with the Bengals players. Pac-Man Jones puts his hands on Joey Porter, and what results is 2 15-yard penalties.
It's brutal. It's a eulogy on the entire season. Just wrapped up in the stupidest play in the history of the Bengals franchise. Yeah, and like and what can you do at the time? And maybe just a little bit, even looking back now, it was like, why the hell is Joey Porter on the field right now?
For the viewers, Joey Porter is a coach at this point. And yeah, Joey Porter Senior is a coach.
Yeah, right. We should make that clear
for the listeners.
Yeah, he's not in a jersey. That would change everything if he was just, I don't know, lined up on offense for some reason.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the perfect hit is clearly a penalty. Can Adam Jones push an assistant coach? No, you probably shouldn't be doing that. Why is Joey Porter in the middle of a football field? Seconds after the, well, I guess they were, I mean, they were checking on Antonio Brown. He didn't look like he was doing so well after that blatantly illegal hit.
But Joey Porter, it seemed like he was face to face with a bunch of guys who in Bengals jerseys who weren't Antonio Brown. That seemed
right.
Official,
yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah. That's a weird way.
Bengals plan that.
That's Bengals a weird way to check on someone by getting in a fight with someone else 10 feet away. I think, surprise, I'm a fan of one of these teams, but it seems like we should have maybe flagged the sideline of the Steelers, and this should have just been a 15-yard penalty. Who could say?
Steelers are in a position for a chip shot. It just seemed like Porter put some great bait out there.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And got Bengals to flinch.
He went straight to Pac-Man. He wasn't he didn't walk up to Geno Atkins and start mouthing at him. He went to a guy that goes by Pac-Man.
Yeah. A guy who's gotten to a lot of documented history of altercations, various businesses.
Businesses.
And Joey Porter seems to find that guy. Joey Porter, I imagine he's like a linebacker's coach.
Yeah,
the offense is on the field. Porter gets the Steelers an extra 15 yards to make it a chip shot at that point. You know, he couldn't stop torturing you, or he thought it was over.
Right.
You thought he's done torturing you once he took the jersey off for a headset.
With a headset. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's still costing us 15 yards. He did it for, I don't even know how long, 14 years. He had a nice long career. Stay on the sideline. Leave us alone. Let us have a chance.
So it did seem like a winnable AFC that year for the Bengals, but instead you have whatever that was, Steelers in Cincinnati. Jim Nantz at the end of this one says, the drought does not end on a rain-soaked night.
That's such a good line.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Go on.
A vicious, violent game it was. And then with Phil Simms is talking about how it all, Pac-Man Jones and Perfect made all these great plays. And it all means nothing because of those two flags. And they're just going full end of Blade Runner there. Like, this game is just the season just it was just tears and rain.
Yeah. Pointless season, even. two flag. Don't even come out next year. Take a year off, Cincinnati. Yeah. You got two flags at the end of this game.
A really good team, top to bottom. And then you get the Dalton injures his thumb week 15. And the top-rated quarterback in the AFC is gone. And maybe you got him. Maybe you get him back the following week against the Patriots. Like, I'd say, you know, they down the stretch, that was a down Patriots team relative to other years. And you might have gotten Dalton back. But two 15-yard penalties in a row and a fumble with the ball just before that. And it's just tears and rain, man.
Just tears and rain. Pointless season.
Yeah. So
just a wet drought.
Yeah. So compare that to the next time. Compare that to the next time y'all are in the playoffs. Or does that 2021 run make you more able to stomach being without Burrow down the stretch this season, knowing that your last playoff game wasn't this 2015 game we just went through?
Yeah, it's a little more palpable. This wasn't like the final salvation season. I mean, in 2020, the 2023 season is not the final salvation season where we're like, oh, finally we get to have a team in the playoffs again. after 8 years. So having the 2021 run and having a bit of a run in 2022 was nice. The Bengals didn't look that strong in 2023 as it was. I'm just going to talk about it in past tense. You know what's funny, though, is A.J. McCarron's on this team. And I didn't realize that until today.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, wow. He's backing up Jake Browning. I don't even know if he's on the active roster. I mean, I'm sure he's on the active roster now after the season-ending injury. But if we get some A.J. McCarron snaps in a Bengals uniform in 2023, I'm going to be so here for it.
This guy led a fourth quarter comeback drive in the playoffs.
Right. And it was wet too, you know? So what if he gets a couple of drive games under his belt with 8 more years of starting experience? I think he started maybe a little bit for the Texans. Where has he been actually?
how friggin' sick will you be if AJ McCarron actually plays maybe even better than he did in 2015 down the stretch, and you get Bengals Steelers first round? How sick will you be?
I'll never watch another snap. I'm done. I'm out.
This has been another episode of Remember That Game. Please rate, review, subscribe, and check out more episodes.